Good morning, everybody. It's just after 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. Lizzie and I are here again for Turning Towards Life. This is our 29th week of this project, and I want to say good morning to everyone. Good afternoon, good evening, depending upon where you are in the world, and welcome to this. We're so pleased we have you with us. And I thought before we begin this morning, I just wanted to say something again about this project, because this, as I'm sure many of you who've been following us for a long time will know, got born out of the work that Lizzie and I are doing in coaching and in teaching coaching. And I said this last week, but I'm going to say this again. We have our year-long professional coach program coming up in June, and it's very much on my mind as we come into these sources, not just how these are deeply relevant to questions of human life, but also how they might help each of us be profound help to others, which of course in the end is what coaching is about. So I'm excited about this source that Lizzie's chosen, primarily because not only is it brilliant and interesting and stretching, but it's been in the midst of some conversations I've been having with people who I've been working with as coaching clients at the moment. And I've been watching how in them and in me, it's been upending things in a powerful way. So thank you, Lizzie, for choosing this.
Yeah, so I, just to say something about how come I chose this, I think if you were with us last week, you would have heard us speaking about the nature of change and the paradox around change. And one of the things I realized afterwards, Justin and I had a chat afterwards about what happened, and I realized that one of the places that I go to in the kind of confusion that I experience, and the kind of also the when I feel like I'm really on a roll in my personality, like I'm really, you know, just kind of, for me anyway, bumbling along and quite asleep to my life. One of the ways that I have, a practice that I have to stop myself in my tracks so that I can deepen and make a deeper kind of contact with myself and my life, is to read Ursula Le Guin's book, The Way and the Power of the Way, which is essentially, as I understand it, a repeated experience of being arrested in the way that she delivers and articulates this text. And so after our call, and I was feeling that, you know, I was feeling the hardness and the difficulty of trying to get my head around things. And I often say that, how do I get my head around this? Like, how do I really have something? And of course, and we'll get into this in a second, of course, really having something is what strangles it. And when we can allow something to be in front of us without having it, when we can allow something to be here without us fully reconciling it, something else gets born. And I think also, as I'm saying this, I'm realizing that the way that I've been educated anyway was that you have to completely understand things. You have to be able to totally get something and then explain it really clearly. And I still have that going on. So when we have sources that are confusing or difficult, and or my life is confusing or difficult in some way where I can't solve a problem, I can't fix anything, there is this world that opens up through reading something like this poem that brings me in some way a deeper confusion, but a comfort in the fact that the intention of the thing itself is to create an opening in my very habitual mind. So the reason I chose this was that it feels like it throws me. And to be thrown out of our habitual way of knowing ourselves, our habitual way of thinking something through or figuring something out, feels like a huge gift. And of course, the territory and we've spoken about this before, Justin, the territory is unknown. The territory is a bit frightening. The territory is not nailable, downable. It's not a clean situation that you get thrown into through reading this. And yet it feels like I'm being drenched with water after being in a desert when I read it. So I guess it's partly in response to our conversation last week, and also just as a sharing of one of the ways that I feel is so inviting and hard in terms of really dedicating ourselves to something different than our habitual patterns. This is an amazing starting point, again and again and again. So shall I begin reading, Justin? Is that...
I think I might say something about the source as well, just before you read it for the first time. So first thing I wanted to do is to honour Ursula Le Guin, whose translation this is of an ancient Chinese work by Lao Tzu, and it's the way is the Tao. So this is a Taoist, the main text of Taoism. And Ursula Le Guin, who is an absolutely extraordinary writer, died maybe only 3 or 4 weeks ago. And so it seems very fitting to me, a beautiful way of honouring her life and her really extraordinary work in many, many different fields, that we have her here with us. So I'm glad that you picked this, Lizzie. The other thing I wanted to say before you started to read is, in this book, Ursula Le Guin, she does these beautiful, inspiring translations, and then sometimes she has a little note after each little chapter. And I think it's this one where she says, if you read this and let this in, it has the capacity of doubling the size of the universe. You know, those things that we read that are so outside of our ordinary way of making sense of things, that they can have this power to flip the way that we see things inside out. And I think that this is one of those, and which is why it's hard, Lizzie, and also why it's important. And I think it's important that Lao Tzu, in writing this, I think that what he's trying to do is to wake us up. This isn't a poem, a piece to soothe us, to have us go, oh yes, everything's fine, I you know, and to cocoon us. It's to do the opposite. It's to say, wake up, things might not be the way that you think they are, you might not be the way that you think you are. And I thought it might be helpful for us to know this before we go in.
And I think one other thing to say as well is that I'm choosing this in a way that it's very hard for me to say things about what happens when I read this and then what happens to me. And I'm loving that this is a space and that our work affords us the opportunity to be here and not have something licked, you know, to be here and like see like what happens in the conversation between us and what might get born in the reflection on this. Like, I'm finding that so brilliant and moving that's possible in the world, that I don't have to kind of revise this and then come with a load of things that I've prepared and then you ask me some questions or something and then I ask you some, you know, I'm just in appreciation of the fact that we don't know what this is and we probably never will, and yet we still bring it. Okay, so here we go. So if you're listening to this now and you've just heard Justin and I speaking, I invite you to take a breath and feel where your body is in contact with whatever it's standing or sitting on. And see what you can do to not try and work this out, but to be with these words and let them trickle through your being and see what happens. Soul food. Everybody on earth knowing that beauty is beautiful makes ugliness. Everybody knowing that goodness is good makes wickedness. For being and non-being arise together, hard and easy complete each other, long and short, shape each other. High and low depend on each other. Note and voice make the music together. Before and after follow each other. That's why the wise soul does without doing, teaches without talking. The things of this world exist. They are. You can't refuse them. To bear and not to own, to act and not lay claim, to do the work and let it go, for just letting it go is what makes it stay.
So this is soul food. Everybody on earth, knowing that beauty is beautiful, makes ugliness. Everybody knowing that goodness is good, makes wickedness. For being and non-being arise together. Hard and easy complete each other. Long and short shape each other. High and low depend on each other. Note and voice make the music together. Before and after follow each other. That's why the wise soul does without doing, teaches without talking. The things of this world exist, they are, you can't refuse them. To bear and not to own, to act and not lay claim, to do the work and let it go. For just letting it go is what makes it stay.
So to me, the last paragraph of this is such a huge invitation. You know, to do something and not need it to be mine. To give birth to something and not feel that it has an ownership that is me, and to let things go, to have them be what those things, to have those things be something that stays. And interestingly, again, it just comes back to this kind of faithfulness that's required in order to do that, because it's so strong. The wanting to either take credit or to feel identified with something so that it says something about me to other people, and so that's where the invitation lies for me, is that what if the laying claim and the ownership and the hanging on is this project that is my mission to let go of, and when I let go of that, what's here? And then it makes me feel into the title of this, which is soul food. You know, this isn't personality food. This isn't ego food. This is like a different kind of nutrition, a different kind of invitation. And the way that it artfully links that with non-doing and acceptance, it kind of points to the way. Really, I'm just realizing this is called the way, but it points to the way that's different than the habit. And it does it in all these kind of jumping aroundy kind of ways as well. So I think the way that it's even constructed feels like it throws us into a kind of, oh, I find myself here without my strategies. And that feels like soul food.
You know, you were just talking about habit, and it struck me that this entire piece is a powerful habit undoer or habit breaker is maybe it part of its intention. So to take up where you started, Lizzie. Yes, ego food or personality food. I can so feel this in myself. It's so much of my ways of holding tight onto things come from the fear or the terror that something will happen that I won't be able to tolerate. I'll get shamed, or I won't be in control, or I won't know what to do. And I think all of us, in one way or another, this something that we call personality or ego, and they're not exactly the same thing, but we construct them around this, which is, let me find habitual ways that will relieve me of the tension of feeling afraid or feeling unsure, and will have the world be obvious, and then I can hold on tight. And that's what, for me, leads to this part that you drew attention to at the end, the opposite, the thing to do the work and hold on to it, and for this to be hard. Mm. It's really, really hard to hold on to something, to control it, to have it go my way. How often in what I'm doing, and not so much in this project we're doing together, but how often can I feel the part of me that is holding on because I want a certain something to happen in the future, or I want to avoid something, and so it's like throttling, and that's the nature of the habits of our personalities. In one way, they're really necessary for getting us through the world. If we didn't have them, life would have been at various points enormously difficult. But there's another way in which we squeeze the life out of ourselves, and we squeeze the life out of things through all of this. And so doing the work and letting it go, doing the work and letting it go, not letting everything go, doing what, and this seems really important to me, doing what we're called to do, doing, there's stuff to do. And it's why, from what you said just now, Lizzie, it's I'm getting a new insight or a new sense of this place that this whole thing opens, that I have read many times and been completely confused by. Everybody on earth knowing that beauty is beautiful makes ugliness. And my first response is to go, what? If beauty is beautiful and we know that beauty is beautiful, that's beautiful. And Lao Tzu's saying, no. If everybody was certain about this, and that's what I think knowing means. Like, the moment we all get certain that that's beauty and that that's not, that's when ugliness is made. And the moment that we all get certain that that's good, which means that's not, is what brings about wickedness. And he's trying to undo, and she, of course, it's Ursula Le Guin and Lao Tzu in partnership writing this. It's really striking me that what they're together trying to do is to loosen the grip on our certainty, but not to replace it with the other end, which is uncertain. Now, I was certain and now I've got to be uncertain. No, it's to keep on pulling apart our rigid ways of seeing things, and even what we're so sure about, we could do with letting some space in it so that something else can come through.
Mm. Oh, I love that, Justin. I mean, I'm so grateful for your words and your language, because the part, everybody on earth knowing that beauty is beautiful makes ugliness. It's like, I can feel the thrownness of that. But what I'm appreciating is your articulation of the fact that, or the perspective that, knowing that beauty is beautiful, I think what you're saying is it kind of makes a definition up what beauty is, if everybody thinks the same thing or perceives the same thing as beautiful. And of course, there's beauty in the disagreement of what's beautiful, that there's, so it's, I'm enjoying the way that it's pulling apart so that we don't get righteous or something. Like, as in, this is good and that's bad. And if we all agreed on the same thing, we wouldn't, so I think the feeling that I'm getting is that the inside the contrast, like life happens, like between two poles, in the in-between is what is giving life to life. A little bit like the nature of relationship. You know, you not trying to make me like you, and me not as in the same as you, and me not trying to make you the same as me or think you should be the same as me, in that space between us where we can be different and respectful and loving, but not trying to turn one another into to each other. Something beautiful is born. And I feel like that's the invitation here, which is how do we, like the things of this world exist. They are, you can't refuse them. Feels like an invitation for you to be you and me to be me. We are us. We're not robots. We're not going to be the same. None of us are in the whole world. And the potential of what's possible because of the contrast that's here is so huge. And yet it's so scary because there's no way we could control it or even know what it is. And you saying those things has just done another layer of like throwing me into seeing the beauty, the importance, the profundity of contrast. And then we can work differently with the contrasting parts and not have to condemn them or think that they're wrong, but to welcome them into the holding of one extreme of long and one extreme of short, and allowing them in their contrast to help each of them emerge as who they are, what they are, truly.
Oh, you just said the things of, I know you were quoting from this, the things of the world are, the things of this world exist, they are, you can't refuse them. And I was thinking, boy, how often I try to refuse them. You know, as if that were going to work. And refuse one another. And I really was touched, Lizzie, by your pointing out the ways in which we try to make one another like ourselves. And it's been such a trap for me so many times, you know, to bring you something or to bring someone else who I care about something that I care about and want them to go, yes, that's great. And to feel that, you know, if I bring you something and want you to approve of something that I'm approving of, I'm essentially demanding that you are another version of me and then I'll feel okay.
Yes.
And refusing the way that you are and refusing to be in contact with the way that you are and also refusing to be, and it's coming to me that this whole piece is also about this, open and porous to the way that you are. I mean, this is an invitation to circle back to where you began, to do our work and to let it go, is to make a big commitment and a big effort and then be open and porous to the way the world is and what happens from our work.
Yeah.
To not be so sure that my definition of good is the only good, or that my sense of what's beautiful is the only beauty, and to be encounter you or others or the world with the possibility of letting go and letting in enough that I might be changed by the experience. So that's also soul food. And I have a sense that as I'm speaking, that's growing in me, that maybe what nourishes us as living beings, human beings, is this, is when we allow ourselves to be changed and affected by life. And what throttles us is when we try to throttle all of that out of life. And this is happening at all levels in our culture. I think it's the big political question of our time, as to what extent are we willing to really talk with anyone else other than our own worldview. And it's a personal question, to what extent am I able to talk with my partner or my children or my friends or my colleagues in such a way that allows in hard and easy completing one another and long and short shaping one another. And it's really, really hard because we want to keep ourselves safe from the upending that will happen when we encounter difference.
Yeah. And it's also, so what's coming to mind for me, Justin, is, you know, when we try and control the way other people do things, you know, like really basic stuff, like how somebody loads the dishwasher. And I mean, I think I'm particularly bad at loading dishwashers because people often load them after I've loaded them. They like rearrange it after I've done it. But I often think that's quite something, you know, just as a metaphor, if we're looking to rearrange everybody's dishwashers, it's another way of saying you should be like me. You should load the dishwasher the way that I load the dishwasher. Because the way I load the dishwasher is the best way to load the dishwasher. And I'm actually fine with that, but it's not necessarily a good experience for people to feel like somebody thinks that they're not good and you're better. Like it doesn't produce a very dignifying, validating scenario for a human being to feel like your way is better than their way. And therefore implicit in that is that there's something wrong with them. Like if we're going around implicitly behaving like there's something wrong with everybody around us, and we are as powerful as we are in relationship, which is we're affecting one another all the time, what kind of world am I making for myself, actually, as well, to be the kind of pinnacle of how things are done around here? And what kind of world am I making for somebody else to feel that implicit criticism all the time? Because I can't tolerate that the way they load the dishwasher is different to me. So I'm kind of... And as you say, I think this is happening everywhere. This happens when people manage people, lead organizations, parent, being a sibling, you know, everywhere. And being a prime minister, working with other leaders in the world, and my goodness, it's a really big thing to be in the conversation with ourselves that things need to go my way. And to feel in this moment, feeling the impact of that on the world and how it extrapolates into various places of power as well.
We so easily get polarized even over what to do about the dishwasher. So I think it's such a great example. So either here's one or two things that could happen for me, and I've never loaded a dishwasher with you, I think, yet, Lizzie. So we should try this. Is either I have to show you how to load the dishwasher correctly, which is making this move of imposing my own world on you. And I definitely know the parts of me that can get into that with other people, which is frustration, fear, anxiety, self-righteousness. I'll show you and then you'll do it my way. But the other side of the polarity there is to ignore it. When actually I might be able to help you in ways that you would find life-giving and useful. You may not, and you can choose. But so that, you know, that either I'll impose myself on you, or I'm out of here, not in a relationship. And you probably will have lots to teach me about loading the dishwasher too. And that's why I was really taken as you were talking about all of these different levels of dishwashers up to politics, of this three lines near the end. This is why the wise soul does without doing, teaches without talking. And it got me wondering, what's the kind of openness to the world and the kind of groundedness and depth and courage I need to have to be someone who can share what I see and also the questions, confusions that I have in a way that might be a benefit to others, could be a blessing to them, without doing it to them or telling them, which are the doing and talking sides of things. How can I get on with being in the world and bringing everything I have to bring straightforwardly without the doing being the whole part of it? And how can I teach without insisting that everybody hear things exactly the way I have to say them, or says or say them the way I have to say them? This is such a huge invitation here, is to do and to teach without doing and without talking. Does that make any sense to say it to that way?
Yeah, it really does. And I think what you're pointing to is, in this moment I'm seeing anyway, like a depth of contact that has a doingness about it, but that's not doing. As in, we're acting, but we're not, I think you said, throttling something.
Mm.
But there's a way of, there's an invitation to a way of being that has allowing woven into the doing, that has acceptance woven into the way that you talk to me about how to load the dishwasher. So you're finding the space in between the polarities to live from in the way that we communicate, in the way that we hold other people. So instead of the either withdrawing or throttling, again, I feel like it's the way. The way is the middle something, or
yes,
it's what you find when you stretch between two places. It's like, I can either withdraw, I can either run away, or I can do this to death. And either way, like, it never works out. And we would have all done this 100 times in an argument or in a conflict or a difficulty of some kind or a pattern. We try all these things. We try withdrawing and we end up feeling lonely and isolated and resentful, probably. Or we try and go hammer and tongs straight in there and sort this thing out, and it just ends up in some kind of explosion. And in that way, both those strategies are all that's really available to us, because it's all we know how to do. And yet there is like the third way, if you like, or the third space even. Like, it's so funny how these different meanings emerge for the third space thing that we are, where there's a way that's the in-between way, the middle way, the unobvious way, the way of what feels like mystery, that has us be in the conversation about the dishwasher in a way that doesn't alienate somebody, that doesn't bolster our own ego, that doesn't only serve us in terms of making us feel safe, that it's all loaded correctly and how it should be, but that middle way holds more than just our own agenda. It holds more than our own desire and wish for fixedness and safety that we have. And I think that's what the last paragraph is all on about, is to bear and not to own, you know, to load the dishwasher and not be attached to the way the dishwasher's loaded, you know, to do things without having them have to be an expression of our identity, because our identity, we're encountering ourselves in a deeper way, that our identity doesn't depend on whether dishwasher's loaded or not in exactly the right way. We think that's what, when you're speaking, that's what I feel invited into, is like a deeper questioning of what that way is and how we can not jump on either train.
Yes. I'm so glad you brought up the name third space, and then thinking about us heading to a close this morning and thinking, yes, that's what seems both important to me in life and I know is really deeply rooted at the heart of our work with people, which is that we can so easily get into, this is what I got from the way that you were saying it, either I'm going to sort of smash you and get my way, you know, smash through the world, or I'm going to withdraw. But between us all the time, there's you and me, and there's a third something, which for Lao Tzu is the Tao, it is the way, and the way is life itself. And that when we cultivate the capacity to pay attention, really to pay attention in a sustained way to what would be life-giving here, what's life calling for here, not me versus you, or you versus me, or me winning the game or losing to you, but the third something, which is the life that holds us all the time. If we can pay attention to that, that's the way of the Tao. And it's also what might get us out of the huge breakdowns we can have over dishwashers and over who we elected and how we should treat people who are different to us and all of this. So yes, we've arrived at a deep articulation of what it is that this coaching, this thing that we call coaching, that we're up to in the world is also about. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you, Justin.
And thank you, everyone, for...
to be sharing in this particular way. I feel relieved and like... it's so hard to describe what we do.
Yes.
And I feel like the vibe of this and what we're just talking about, it's not straightforward, but we said it, you know.
Yeah. No, I'm really glad we did.
Probably small way right now.
Really, yeah. Well, thank you to everyone for being with us as well.
Yeah.
I keep on meeting people who say, oh, I saw you on Sunday morning, which is, I didn't know we're watching, which is proof to me that there's something happening from this that's worthwhile beyond the two of us, and we would do it even if it were the two of us. So thank you to everyone for being part of this with us. And please know that you're very welcome to tell other people who you care about this so that they can benefit too. Yeah. And we will plan on being here next Sunday, the 29th of April, for conversation number 30 in this series. We look forward to seeing you then.
Bye, everybody. Bye.